It's perfect timing, man.
Has occurred.
Figures.
Oh, you don't see a countdown. Is there a countdown going on?
There was.
Stream is live.
It's live.
Okay, we are live. Technical difficulties live now. Welcome to the Dudes That Grow panel. What do you do when you cut down 830 plants when you harvest? You know, you got a lot of work is what I'm thinking. Guys, today we're going to talk outdoor grow, a little indoor grow, a little hash extract, all kinds of good stuff. We have just ready to rock. We want to do this one as a live hang with no format, man. We're going out there, Scotty. Let's do this.
Sorry. I hope everything's okay, man. We've got winds today. Legit winds. It got to be 40, 50 mile an hour. And most of the sounds you hear are okay. That was a little disturbing.
That was like a warning bell.
Yeah. But we're hanging out, man. Actually, Banner, thank you so much. You got our friend in the studio, Jeremy. What's up, brother?
How's it going, guys?
Yeah, man. What is it? It's a Threes Genetics, right?
Threes Genetics.
And what are you online? You're JLS?
JLS Monster.
That's how he refers to you.
The monster.
Duke Diamond, man. Didn't come in the house. What's up, brother? How are you?
Man, you know, just hanging to the right, to the left, wherever the breeze takes it.
Man, how come he sounds higher than me? I'm pretty high. Grambo, thank you for putting all this together, man.
Yes, of course.
All right.
I don't have a camera, but you'll see.
All right, man. We just figured we play this one loose. We got some super interesting people with us, and I thought it'd just be really easy to have some conversation, man.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people asking over on Patreon for some outdoor growing tips
and sure.
questions. So these guys know their shit. So
I'll start right. Jeremy, you're right in front of me. You just we're talking before the show. You just harvested what, an 850 plant greenhouse?
840.
Yep. Don't exaggerate, man.
All by myself.
So yeah, so
that's insane.
Yeah, paint me a picture of this, you know, because I have a 20-acre nursery. I have five people that run it with me.
Yeah.
It's nothing like 800, you know, that big of a greenhouse. So yeah, paint me a picture of that.
Well, it's a 230-foot wide by 500-foot long double hooped greenhouse with four rows of beds that I built myself.
Wait, so you're growing in beds? You're not growing in
beds?
Because you're a living soil guy, right?
Yes, 100%.
Man, you paint me a lot of pictures. So how big are these beds and then what's in them?
They're 5 foot wide by 12 foot long. And I've got four rows of seven. And I put roughly 21 plants per bed. So it comes out to be about 840 plants.
Wow. Wow. And how do you get multiple harvests out of that a year?
Well, it's a light dip. So I'm able to manipulate the dark cycle at any point with an automated curtain on the greenhouse.
You do that manually or?
Yeah, it's all automated with the machine. So I don't have to pull any tarps or anything like that, thankfully.
Pushing buttons.
Yep. Just pushing buttons, not pulling tarps. Yeah,
and so how many harvests can you get a year with a light greenhouse?
We usually do three just because it's really expensive in the winter to heat it with the gas heaters. It's usually like $12,000 a month in the winter months.
Oh, shit.
Well, the greenhouse was built very poorly by somebody who wasn't expecting it to be ran like this. So gotcha. The heaters are literally right next to the exhaust fans. So
gotcha.
They can fight themselves a lot in the winter time, so it's really not cost effective to run it
single, because they will do like a double layer of poly and they'll have a fan blowing inside it.
Yep.
And that air layer will keep it, like an insulated.
It's a double layer of poly with a fan like that.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, in the winter time, it's still just it's exhausting humidity because of the beds are so big in there that there's a lot of humidity in the greenhouse.
You know what? When I tried beds in my indoor, when I turned my whole indoor into just a floor of soil, yeah, it turns out that will make a lot of humidity, man.
Yeah, 100%.
The more containers you put in, then the more humidity, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
What do you do with it? You don't trim it anymore?
Depending on the variety, but I fresh freeze everything generally. Or at least I'll take all the tops. I know a lot of people are like, tops are good for flower. But I'm a hash maker, so I take the best stuff for my hash usually. And I'll cut it just enough so that I can pull it out of the trellis easy.
Right.
And then I might hang up the base of the plant with the smalls on it, and then that can go off for a secondary extraction after the fact.
Really?
It's just, it's impossible for me to harvest all of those plants. I'll work for like 2 weeks on the harvest straight, doing 8 hours a day, just fresh freezing. And I'll probably get through about 60% of it. But at that point, I just have to call it because I'm shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet. Think about like hiring someone?
No. No, actually, we had 6 grow assistants at one point, and then the market fell out of what the hemp market was.
Right.
And then they fired all my grow assistants at that point. So I just kind of maintained the exact same thing that we were doing with 8 people by myself at this point. Hmm. It's been a lot. I work a lot harder than I used to, but I've kept up the same quality.
Wow. So. You should get into the weed business. Yeah, you can just grow weed and make a bunch of money, man.
They say you can.
Yeah. Duke, are you an extractor? Do you extract? Are you a house maker?
I do make the hash for myself these days, for sure.
Do you breed for that?
I do, but I haven't like released any of it. Like, it's just like, you know, here's your seeds. Like, these are all, you know, I've had stuff turn out like they're incredible, you know, washing and, you know, rosin and all, but you know, it, you know, it's not specifically, you know, geared for that necessarily.
I've seen more and more of that. It's, you know, strain guys. I have a lot of people, when I talk to Hot Rod, when I talk to somebody like Juke, they're telling me, man, they care about how it washes. Yeah. It's one of the first things people ask.
Everybody throws percentages on now, like the
yield, the terps, man.
Yeah, that's tough, man. Like, you grow out of enough of anything, you know, you got those ones that stand out that are indicative of maybe a number they might speak of. But even out of the same genotype, you know, some of them are, some of them aren't. So I don't know, that percentage thing's kind of, I don't know.
You got people asking you?
Yeah, I just tell them the truth. Tell them the truth. They're like, yeah, some phenos will, you know, others not so much, you know. So, unless I'm like giving them a clone, you know, and I'll be like, yeah, I've ran this client a couple years and spot on right around here. Here's your number, you know. Then, yeah, of course, but I don't know, seed wise. Yeah.
When you guys talk to people, everybody cares about what the terpenes are testing, what it's washing.
I just noticed that's more and more of the conversation. I've seen a number of people that have like their mothers or their clones, and they've run them a bunch of times. And so they're starting to throw a percentage on there. So, I mean, for a clone, it's probably pretty close. Like, you should be able to get pretty close, I would think.
Yeah,
but it was just more about how it's part of the conversation now, where like that, you know, a few years ago, I don't remember people really being talking about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it takes a lot of work for a breeder to confidently say that his seed stock washes at a certain percentage overall. Like Duke's saying, it's more genotype specific for a lot of people. You'll find outliers in most populations will have good hash plants in them, unless you're talking about like legitimate tropical sativas, which you may not find a legitimate hash plant in something like that. But most work that has anything indica in it at all that's been hybridized, you can find something if you hunt enough numbers.
Do you guys notice any difference growing for that outside versus inside?
Yeah, can you make
as far as making hash?
Way more hash.
How's the terps?
Better.
They are better, right?
Fuller. They have like,
I bet
it's more nuanced. It has layers and depth to it that the indoors can have, but they don't always have.
I think we talk about stresses and stuff like that. It'll get cold or it'll get windy. You know, I mean, there's all these stresses that happen. Abiotic, man.
Sunlight. Yeah.
So it's like,
there you go.
It's all sunlight.
Dude, we were looking at this chart of like what sunlight looks like compared to HPS and I can't remember, CFL and LED. And man, the sunlight, you know, the LED's got like a peak like this. Sunlight's boom. It's just a bar.
Everything.
Man. It's everything. Yeah. I don't like dude's body language.
What do I have? Is it too? What am I doing wrong here? All right, let me.
Dude has thinking body language, so you always know when he has bad body language. That means he's thinking.
That's happy.
Yes.
I was thinking. I was thinking about outdoor grow tips. I mean, we've got two great outdoor growers here. You know, just in general, they can go anything from somebody, you know, growing a ton of plants like you, Jeremy, or just down to the small grower. I'll start with you, Duke. You have a few, just put you on the spot, outdoor grow tips that you've learned work well.
Yeah, for sure. I guess, you know, it'll vary a few different things, but, you know, some people got, you know, they're going right into the ground. You know, some people got the raised beds, you know, some people got some pots, you know, some of them are going to be big, some will be small and move them around. You know,
what are you starting? When do you bring them out?
Well, where I live now, it's probably that last week of May, first week of June. I'm pretty high altitude. So like, you know, you can get some of those wild snowstorms and freezes still rolling on you. So I'm cool with waiting. I'm not doing any production or anything, you know, it's just for like shits and giggles.
Somebody asked me how big how to time putting them out. And I was like, I wouldn't be scared to go out in 3 gallons, man, and just start early. Put something out in a nice big 3 gallon.
Yeah, I go with a larger container, and you know, it also depends. Like, what am I doing? Am I taking some clones out there, and you know, just blooming out some small little guys? You know, doing the thing just for the hell of it, or am I going from seed? Am I growing some larger plants? You know, it kind of depends. You know,
what if you were just like normal dude at home? I got a backyard and yeah, I can put out a couple plants and never done it before.
What do you think? Tango?
What's like some just good tips where I'm not going to just totally screw it up?
Yeah.
What I would do is, you just, you know, starting out, I would say, you know, get at least like a 15 gallon, maybe a 20 gallon, you know, at minimum. All right.
Jeremy agrees. Bigger is better.
Yeah, and it's just more consistent. The thing is like we're in a dynamic environment now, right? We're not indoor where we're controlled, so we're gonna have rain, we're gonna have really dry spells, we're gonna have wind, we're gonna have, you know, different environmental fluctuations between day and night and all that. So, you know, that 15 or 20 gives you a little more cushion. You know, you're just starting out. You know, overwatering, underwatering, you know, that's a factor. And then water, when you really, really want it, it's not going to rain. It's literally not going to. After like 30 years, I finally figured it out. Like, yeah, it's just not going to rain. So, and now right after you water and you wash your car, yeah, you're going to get like 2 or 3 days of rain. So what I would suggest is like, your container that you're going to use, I'm a big fan of fabric pots, you know, nice even drying and everything. You get the good wicking effect, you get that aeration to your soil. Get a lighter color, because if you go with black pots, that sun's just going to cook your roots in. They're going to be pissed off. They're not going to do well. So lighter color pot, 15, 20 gallon minimum. And then we got to talk about like building the container, right? So now whether you're going into the ground directly or you're in a container, have a good drainage layer, get some pumice stone or whatever, you know, and get that on the bottom layered up like 2 inches, you know, maybe even 3 inches, then put your soil in there over top of that. That way you're getting a good drainage layer. You're getting some good aeration underneath. You're giving a little bit of a barrier between the earth itself. So, you know, that can help with temperature regulation. So, you know, swinging so much, being above ground, and put your time into that. I'm a big fan of kind of a minimalist. So like I'll mix up, you know, my own soil, but like you can get it from Build-A-Soil now. But either way, like a good quality, heavy, you know, people will call it a super soil or whatnot, but just something good, you know, that's kind of all in one. and get that in there. And then inputs very infrequently, you know, like it's in the backyard, it's legal, whatever, go do your thing.
You guys have the same grow style then, right?
Yeah.
Amended super soil? Is that what you'd call it? Is it a super soil?
Yeah, it's just so good.
Living, but it's a super soil.
Okay, so it's just all you're doing is you're taking your rock dust and all that stuff, your
sulfates and nitrates and nitrates, just the whole minerals going into it. Yeah, it's a convoluted system, but I think a lot of people think it's the easiest when you know how to do it.
Well, all you're doing is preloading it with your slow release, you know, these things that need to be weathered or microbially processed, and then you're just letting it happen.
Yep.
Do you guys have a preference, containers versus like direct in the ground? Do you notice a difference?
You know what? I got to say that Pi R Round, I just wanted to say his name. Pi R Round, that's a great name. Talked about burying 20-gallon fabric pots, and he says, or she, buried half in horse poop. Yeah, right? Little horse manure.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Some of that Mr. Ed weed have you.
All right, that was my interruptus. Sorry. You go in the ground? Any of you guys go in the ground? Do you ever try that? Half in the ground? Hard as all hell.
There's advantages.
Yeah, so I'll build like a small bed on the top of the ground. So I have like the first 6 to 10 inches of actual like good soil. Mm-hmm. And then it just taps into the ground through that. It helps a lot. They will stay happy through pretty much any condition in the wild.
Isn't that amazing? And is it because it's like literally like connected to the earth? You know what I mean?
It seems
It definitely is. And anything you do in ground is so much easier.
That's what I'm saying.
You got geothermal activity and stuff, more consistent temperatures in the root zone.
Yeah, you're not having root swings temperature-wise.
Up where you're living, I did 10 acres out there, outskirts of Loveland, going right into the ground to like set up like rows. And all that calcium, man, all that excess calcium that was in there. Like, I mean, you talk about jamming the fuck out, man. Like they were going hard. And then like back east, you know, we always went right into the ground out there too, cause they were gorilla grows and whatnot. And like there's a difference, but I kind of figured like, you know, there's a lot to be said for that consistent root zone temperature. You know, they kind of get used to it. It just kind of maintains. You know, that might be a little something too.
And is there like, I mean, you can still, you know, transplant it outside into the ground just as you would put a container out at the same time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Assuming that you have some decent ground, it's not, you know, horrible.
Yeah, what do you guys do? Tell me about if I was going to go out and amend my soil here. I'm in terrible clay, so I definitely would have to bust it up and amend it.
Gypsum, man. Lots of gypsum in there. That's a good calcium and sulfur source. Helps to loosen up clay soils and everything.
Yeah, I've heard that about gypsum. It loosens up clay soils. That's a weird
thing. What I would recommend is growing a season of cover crop to aerate your soil so that you're not battling compacted soil. So if you had a bunch of clay and you grew a bunch of comfrey and clover and a bunch of things that just naturally aerated it, and then you composted down, it's free minerals. It's helping you in the long run.
You got such a hippie way of growing it.
Well,
you're a ponytail.
And by the way, both of you guys like, you know, focus on sort of natural inputs.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to comment, and you guys can talk more about it, of course, but I get the vibe that a lot of it's actually, I mean, besides sort of the belief in the quality, a lot of it's driven by like, it's cheaper. It costs you a lot less money if you can just tap into your soil that you have, even if you only have to amend it a little bit, but instead of buying nutrients and stuff like that. And then, you know, it gets better every year.
Old school. I'm a super lazy dude. Like I'm like as lazy as it gets. So if there's like an easier way to do something to get to the same end goal and quality, like I'm gonna go that way, man.
Remember there's a famous I think it's Gabe Brown, I can't remember what his name is, and he just says his motto is, you got to get lazier. Like, you're doing too much to your soil.
You're doing
too much. You let the soil start working for you, man.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, at some point, and especially with outdoor, you know, like, you're not going to buy a ton of bags of soil to grow your outdoor when you have soil right there.
You got to take it.
So, like, you got workers, right? And those workers, those are microbes, man. So those microbes are doing work while we're off doing our thing. At that point, like, if everything's there, we just got to keep them wet, man. Yep. And then, you know, with your outdoor stuff, you know, defoliation, like, is like, people do the fuck out, like, they overdo it, like, indoors. And for whatever reason, man, like, I see these ginormous plants outside and, like, nope, not stripping shit. Just, you know, leave it be. And it's like, hey, man, you know, you still need a good, you know, good airflow and everything through there. So you're not giving you're giving places for pests to hide, you know, and mold and shit like that. So, you know, give it some love, man. You know, give it a little haircut, you know, it'll go a long way.
Do you guys pop your I've never grown a huge outdoor. I've grown greenhouse, and I did shape them. I did cut the top off them and wanted them to grow big and fat, you know?
Yeah,
if I'm growing, it really depends. If I'm in a pot and I don't have the ability to throw stakes in the ground and throw a trellis up, I grow them untopped. They tend to resist the wind a little bit better when they're untopped.
Yeah.
When I've got a bunch of multi-topped branches, it's really strain dependent at that point if it's going to resist the wind.
It is.
And most strains can resist the wind when they're untopped.
Yeah. So, and another little thing too, like, if you're moving plants out that you start inside, introduce like some wind to them with a fan. They call it wind cropping. And you're like you're kind of giving them a little jump start, moving those branches around to get a little more fibrous, a little stronger, you know? And then, you know, you were saying like the untop is definitely king. I would just like sit there and pinch the apex and get it to bush up some. But like, if you're ever in that position and you're like, yeah, I listened to the dude and he was like, don't do it. But I was like, fuck it, I'm going to do it. Get you like four stakes. I'm going to pinch your apex. Yeah, just get your four stakes, put them in the pot on the perimeter, and then throw some rope or some string around in rings and kind of keep it bundled up a little bit for you. Just cheap.
I was going to ask you guys, so like, once you get them in, to me, like, probably the hardest part, like, just assuming they're in the ground or they're in a lot of soil, they got food, and then it seems like the biggest things to worry about are keeping the bugs away.
Yeah.
And then, like, what happens when it is windy or rainy? Like, is there a better spot? Would you rather put them in some place that's got, like, a windbreak?
Grandpa, do me a favor. Make me a note for Wednesday's show.
Okay.
Dude, let's find – I got some good greenhouse stuff, man. I know where to find you a greenhouse, man, for $10.11.
I was going
to
say real greenhouses or
The answer is put it in a greenhouse?
The answer is Temu. All right, you get a Temu $11 greenhouse, man. No, the answer is you do put something over it, man. Yeah, you shield it.
I actually am writing that down. That's hilarious.
Something I've always dealt with here on the Front Range, I live out in the open, so there's no wind block, so it's full force winds the entire time. So you don't want to grow in the full sun, but you also don't want to grow in the full wind with a fabric pot sometimes too, because it can dry out your medium way too much if you're in 40 or 50 mile an hour wind constantly. So what I did last year,
your plants are going to be piled with dirt.
So I've wrapped plastic wrap around the center of my fabric pot. I let the bottom little bit have and the top little bit have some space, but that really allows me to get back to the plant before it's wilting. Because a full sun day in June, July, and a full wind day, it's 20 gallons and it's still going to be drinking every day.
Well, that's a good hack.
He's got fabric pot depth.
Yeah, you know? And you got like 800 and something of them, man. You're running.
Yeah, that is work.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah.
What is that?
Sorry. No, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just wondering what that's like, man. I mean, you always hear about, you know, being in the cannabis business and being the head grower. And I've talked to some people. I have some other friends of that. My buddy Brad, I always make the story, have a funny story that I met him. Yep. He was running 100 lighter by himself. You know, it's insane, man. So,
yeah, man.
Makes me worry you're going to say, go ahead, dude.
Oh, I was going to say I was doing 64 lights of bloom in Loveland, like all clandestine style when I first moved there, plus all the seeds, plus the big mom, plus the veg, the clones, the testing rooms and all that. Dude, it was an 18-hour day every day.
Yeah, right. Because of kindred spirits over here.
Yeah, dude,
I'm sleep once a week.
I'm actually living right outside Loveland doing basically the same thing right now. So
I remember having 64 lights and then the trim machines came. And you were like, no, don't use a trim machine, man.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
It was like a moral dilemma.
Yeah, just go get some of that Mobetta gumbo, man. Just do a quick pickup. Oh. Give yourself a 30-minute break every 24 hours and just shit and get.
Mobetta shut down.
Did it?
Yeah, they shut down. The pandemic ended up getting them.
Oh, man. Those are good places to eat around here, a few and far between. Hey, did we talk about amending the soil? If I was going to go out and dig up, what do you put in there?
We stopped at gypsum,
Jeremy, you got any? I know they say compost, right? A good quality compost.
So I don't add anything to my soil without a soil test.
Yeah, so check this out. Tell everybody how you do it.
So I take a soil test and I send it off to Logan Labs, and then there's a guy online, his name is Brian Mason.
Hey, I just want to say real quick, that's not expensive. Maybe $75 or something like that.
I think the test is between $50 and $75.
Yeah, so you guys can do this. Just Google it.
Yeah, I would do, if you have a big enough plot of land, do multiple samples and then homogenize them into one sample so you can get an average for your plot. Otherwise, it can be costly to like quarter out your plot of land and then do four tests and then four different amendment schemes.
Yeah.
But the Brian Mason, he's on Instagram. He has a website. He has a tool called the Soil Doctor app. His screen name is Soil Doctor. You input your Logan Labs test into his algorithm, and it tells you exactly how much of everything needs to be added to the soil.
By weight.
I was showing Banner earlier, but on the app, it shows my 150-gallon pots, and it says I need like 0.08 pounds of manganese sulfate.
Yeah.
0.2 pounds of gypsum.
I get those in my nursery per acre, I'll tell you.
Is this the guy, Jeremy, here?
Yep, that's him.
Does he smoke weed?
He's a soil guru. Yeah, so he manages orchards at scale. So he does like actual agronomy. So he's not just a cannabis guy. He just understands like the Albrecht's method and how to balance soil.
At the end of the day, it's like it's farming. Cannabis, that doesn't like cease to be agriculture and farming, you know? And it's real weird, farming, man, because a lot of people are like that. No shit. They think, okay, cannabis is totally different right here, you know? And man.
It's true. Yeah. Let me fire something. You said Albrecht is how you pronounce his name, right?
Yep.
Soil remineralization.
Yep.
Man, we should shout out to that guy because he was the first guy.
Yep.
I can't remember Stanley Albrecht. I can't remember his name, but I remember reading when I was reading about it. He was the guy that's just like, look for what the plants sucked up and you remove from the soil and then put it back. It's not that hard. Just take a soil test, and it's pretty damn sensible.
And I think after the $75 soil test at Logan Labs, each the soil doctor portion, I think, is $50 per sample. So I think all in, I'm less than $150 for the test.
Doable.
Then for my last, I did 3 lights last round, and it cost me $12 for inputs for my entire remineralization for my 3 lights.
And what does that mean, like as far as remineralization?
Now, I spent $12.
We talked about gypsum. What else? What else did they use?
Mine was like manganese sulfate and like raw minerals. So that I use. So I tend to not use things like compost that have a varying MPK because depending on the compost source, it can be different. So I like to just use raw minerals.
Yeah.
And then you can do it every year. So he's got the records of each
each
year for each plot. And so you can also get an idea of what's being used, which is also really interesting.
Do you have to, like, as far as your base media, like, I know, like, clay has good cation exchange capacity, you know, sand not so much. How do you I guess, you know, what they call it, soil buster when it breaks the clay up and all that? What do you do for that?
You mean like microbes? Where do you get microbes?
No, even just some organic material, humic and phobic. What's up,
Grim? Oh, gotcha. Non-mineral.
It sounded like Banner was like, are you talking about microbes? Like, is this a recharge? Softball. Is this a recharge commercial, Scotty?
Yeah, I mean, I guess stuff where like
can
that.
Where can I get high quality, inexpensive
microbes? Well, you know,
rate-wise, soil dynamics and recharge, dude.
Yep.
That's right, man. Recharge. What if I just pulled the shirt and I was wearing a recharge shirt underneath it, man?
I mean,
yeah, soil microbes.
Organic matter will increase as time goes by just because in my system, obviously, you have worms. I'm going to be defoliating.
Not obviously, that's interesting, man.
Oh, yeah. So I would be using African night crawlers, red wigglers, because the two different worms like to hang out at different depths of soil.
Yeah.
So depending on the size of container you have, you may need different amounts and or types of worms, depending upon the amount of space that they like to occupy. So African night crawlers like to be like 20 inches deep, I believe. And then they, the other ones like to be a little bit more shallow. So you just kind of set up a situation where you're kind of covering all your bases. And then as you grow, you're defoliating, and I just throw the leaves right back on the pot.
Right.
And then I would I would throw some Grokashi down to help start the breakdown process.
And Grokashi is just, it's a Bokashi fungi. Yep. It's like a super aggressive
decomposition.
As soon as you see it down, you'll see the fungus start to just cover your soil bed. And then, you know, after you harvest, you put all the stalks back on the bed, and that's starting your cover crop. So the mulch and the cover crop is all part of it.
It's stuff that you already have. That's what's so cool about it.
But doesn't it make sense? The plant's going to pull stuff up out of the soil, and then you maybe take some fruit off it, but then the rest falls down and doesn't magically go into the air, goes back into the soil.
Yeah, especially with having the leaves back. I mean, I don't know a lot of people that do that, but I mean, it makes perfect sense, no?
Yeah, I chop them up. Chop them up.
Beginning, right?
No, but I mean, that's super cool. And by the way, it's like pretty much free.
It's pretty damn close, yeah.
Yeah.
And when you said you need mineralization.
Do you do anything to manage your worm population? Like, I've heard of, like, avocados. Is it makes, like, a little breeding ground or apples or something?
I've found that stuff to be very unnecessary. The worms get out of control without any help.
Gotcha. Okay.
Taking them back down for once a month or something like that, though.
I have to scrape, after every harvest, I scrape the top 2 to 3 inches of my soil off. And I get all the castings out of it because otherwise it'll be too much casting.
That's so awesome. And the castings are that top layer and fresh. There's not so fresh.
Is that a reason that you really don't need to add a lot of organic matter because they are making it for you?
In fact, the soil test actually will tell you your percentage of organic matter, and it'll let you know when it gets too high and you have to add more soil or something to the mix.
Cool. Very cool.
Can I jump back, jump in here? You guys got me? I had to do a little restart there. I was going to ask Duke, are you still doing a soil blend? I know you had the Dominion blend going with Build-A-Soil.
Yeah, man. Yeah, they're still cranking it out as soon as they can get it itself pretty quick. So they're trying to.
What is it, man?
Tell everybody a little bit about it. I know JR Token was hot to learn a little bit more about it. So if you could give us the skinny, that'd be cool.
All right. So basically, all in one mix. I've talked to guys, you know, they put small clones, and even some guys said they're sprouting seeds in it. Generally, I just kind of reserve it for bloom.
Can I just ask, man? This is a peat base based, or what's the base of it? This is something you'd plan in right off the bat?
What
is something you plant right out of the solo cup or in the solo cup? Is it super hot or rich?
Yeah, like I'm looking to be about a solo cup you know, transfer before, but you know, some guys are going like right into it and it's like no problem. But I don't know. I guess
you don't need like a light warrior.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Got it.
And yeah, it's, like some guys are just like water only. My one buddy did literally water only, didn't add any microbes or anything, just water only, killed it. If you go that route though, just know, you know, you're definitely gonna be depleting, you know, that soil in that container, you know, a lot faster. So but yeah, you know, people do that too.
I just wanted to declare there's no way to grow organic. Maybe added microbes, but yeah, plants don't absorb organic molecules, man.
That's why I use Recharge.
No, but I'm just saying, whether you add added microbes or not.
Well, it's a vacuum, so they're going to be there whether you add them or not.
Yeah. One degree or another. Yeah.
But no, I was going to make a short form piece of content about this, just baiting people. Like your plants don't absorb organic organic plant food, rather. Get everybody mad at me, you know?
Stir up some controversy.
Your microbes do. You're feeding your soil and you're feeding those microbes, and then those microbes are feeding your plant, you know?
So, yeah. Hey, Duke, how long have you been growing in that soil mix?
That I would say it hit another revision around 2012. But it wasn't too much of a tweak, but 2000.
Not your same soil. Been using the same soil since 1983.
Oh.
Recipe.
I got you. All right. So the longest duration I was ever able to stay in one spot was that Loveland spot. That was 5 years. In the bloom rooms with those just constantly really? On, you know, blooming, like no break. I was doing a little top dressing, you know, I don't know, but right just like right after I chopped the third run for the year and adding some EM1 to or some Bokashi to it, some earthworm castings, a little dry amendments, and I would just kind of mix it all up and then just top dress it, hit them, and just let it ride, and never a problem. Yields never suffer.
Right?
Doesn't it break? It also breaks down a little bit over time. Do you have to add something to give it more like structure over time?
Well, I was lucky at the time when I moved to Colorado. There was a company called Growstones, and they were, you know, launching off and everything, and it was aeration made from recycled glass, and it came in different grades, you know, small, medium, large, big, huge, boulder chunks. So they had approached me and was like, yeah, you know, we'll sponsor you, you know, just show them off and everything. And I was like, yeah, it's awesome. I was like, so I don't have to bust these up probably for a very, very, very long time. Like, that's great. So I layered the bottom with the big chunky stuff and mixed my soil up, you know, the way I always do, but I added that in. Try to get about 30% aeration in there, and then just let them roll until, you know, wasn't rolling no more.
What are you doing? How do you keep your stuff from compacting? Because how long have you ran your soil for? I know it's a long time.
Well, I've added soil to the grow,
of course,
but I've had some since 2015, so 9 years going on.
That's really crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what is the process there? So you harvest, you do a soil test, or do you just add, what components would you add?
Well, at this point, I run 150 gallon pots. So at this point, if I didn't want to test between rounds, I can just plant and go and do water only, and I can get to harvest and they're completely fine.
Right.
If I'm running seeds, there are some plants that will have deficiencies. But if I'm running clones, I tend to know what's going on with those, and they aren't finicky. They're just kind of generalist plants, and they can hang out a little bit easier.
Yeah.
When I run seeds in those big pots, there'll be like 1 in 30 that just wants more or something always. So it's different depending on your situation.
Right.
But strain dependent. I mean, but with the 150 no joke, gallon pots, I just maintain a consistent cover crop.
Right.
And that helps keep the soil structure a lot more too. I'm not just compacting soil. I have roots and I have structure in my actual rhizosphere.
The idea behind the cover crop is it going down and breaking up the soil, those roots breaking up the soil, then dying and decomposing in there.
And it also helps with compaction. So the roots are stopping the compaction from happening naturally as you water.
I gotta sneak in since I didn't earlier that Dominion blend, we mentioned Build a Soil. They have a ton of these ingredients if you guys are trying to put something together. So shout out to Jeremy over at Build a Soil. And they also have an open source soil calculator. I don't know how it works. But I just saw it come through my email and it's like a version, I guess, I don't know, Grambo, what does open source mean? Everybody can improve it.
Yeah, you can add to it without having to ask anybody.
Open source.
Sounds dangerous. That sounds dangerous.
Yeah.
Sounds kind of shout out buildasoil.com, guys. Get yourself some stuff or see if there's some fresh Dominion blend available.
Yeah, right. Man. And like Jeremy was talking about, you know, before he does anything, like he gets a soil test. Another really good thing about Build-A-Soil, as they get their raw amendments in, they're always getting tested, you know, to make sure there's nothing fucky with them. Because, you know, some like a lot of like kelp and everything, you know, you were seeing some being sold super high arsenic levels and everything. So they go that extra mile, making sure you're getting something clean.
You'd be really surprised how contaminated some products can be when they're manufactured overseas. It happens in the vitamin world all the time where somebody will be taking some creatine or something and it's got steroids in it or something like that.
Inputs when you're putting something together in America, there's tons of different grades, man. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you gotta, that's why I've always went with Build a Soil as well, because I can trust that they're doing third-party testing and guaranteeing that I'm not ingesting heavy metals.
It is a big deal though, man. There are heavy metals naturally in soils, not just in contaminated soils. Mm-hmm. And it's things that are just, you know, elements that are found in soils, and cannabis being an accumulator, we'll definitely pull them up. And I'll take my Recharge commercial now, man, because Recharge and soil microbes will definitely sequester those, man. Either sequester them or break them down.
Just tell people, dude, don't panic, man. That arsenic's organic. So is the cyanide and all that, too.
Arsenic is a micronutrient, man.
Dude, it's heady, bro. It's heady. So micro becomes a macro and takes you out.
Speaking of nutrients, go ahead.
I was just saying in the chat, somebody, I think maybe it was Sicko Grows, was asking, Duke is going to be at the DGC Cup this year, guys. Ed is a month and a half away. If you haven't gotten your tickets, I believe everybody here on the panel is going to be there. DGCCup.com, check it out. It's going to be, get ready to expand your genetic collection there. We got a bunch of breeders that are going to be hanging. And bring the dank.
Yeah, man.
Looking forward to it. Jeremy, gonna be there, right?
Yeah, I got a booth.
Yeah, you got a booth. Yep. All right, cool. So, you gonna have genetics there?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, I should have all my genetics there, and I should even have rosin of everything I've got as well. I'm pulling down.
Really?
I'm pulling down right, right before the cup, so I should have 9 or 10 different strains all bred and selected by me.
That's gone by the end of the VIP, man. Good stuff, though, man. I really enjoyed your resume. As a matter of fact, come on, we're having fun. Show us what you got, man. What are we smoking here?
So we're smoking on some modified mousse rosin. It's a Mazar I Sharif times Landrace Indica that I hit with a reverse GMO. I selected as far away from GMO as I possibly could, and I found a 48-day cheese and berry dominant plant that's a narrow leaf indica that does not stretch at all. I selected it because I was actually growing outdoors here in Colorado, and on October 1st it was done.
We talked about that before. People were like, 48 days, what? And there's no amber trikes though. That's
there's amber trikes. When I say it's done, I mean it's done. I don't mean I'm chopping because it's hash. Yeah, it's 1 to 5% amber, the appropriate time to chop for real hash, not dispensary hash when it's all white and cloudy. I'm chopping.
It's like beef sand, bro. It's gotta be honey.
I want narcotic effects. Yeah, you gotta have amber trikes or it's not ready.
What did you tell me you did with these? Are these all the same?
Yeah, so that one is just the standard cold cure 73 to 159, one first and second wash. And then this one is the same batch of hash that is just jammed, which is just taking the cold cure or the fresh press and then putting it under heat and then allowing it to halfway decarboxylate while under heat and pressure. And then you take the jar out of the oven and you put it on a heat mat for about a week.
Right.
And there will be microcrystals that form under the pressure.
And that's not that, that's the diamonds and sauce stuff?
That is a similar consistency to diamonds and sauce, but they call it rosin jam in the solventless world. The terpenes completely change. So it goes from like cheddar cheese and blueberries to like straight GMO. The GMO is very present, whereas like the berries volatilize off quick.
The difference is unbelievable. You would think that they are just from completely different.
I was going to ask you to critique them or to smell them because they smelled completely different. One smelled sweet and kind of
that's berry-like. The cheesy berry one,
and the other one is the GMO diaper, you know, kind of thing going. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's exactly the same plant.
Isn't
that amazing?
And what is that? That's just favoring different terpenes in the cure process.
So some terpenes are more volatile than others.
Right.
So I just, when I took it up to that right temperature, the sweeter notes volatilized off and the deeper, earthier, funkier things stayed around. Yeah. So that's why it's GMO with the jam and it's sweet and berries with the cold cure.
Okay.
Trippy, right, man? Yeah. Oh, thank you. God, that is a thief, man. When people leave the lid off the
stealing rosin, my turps.
Not cool. Yeah, turp burglar.
I was gonna ask. Oh,
I was just gonna say, I love the turps, man. When people do that to me at the cup and they're like, here, smell this, and it smells so good, and I can really appreciate that. Usually you don't get that strong a smell of flower. But then most of the time, it's also as far as look goes, Grambo's just showing some stuff. I don't want to insult him, but he kind of just looks like some dirty balm in a jar or something. I mean, don't give the look as much appreciation.
You like the lung butter? I mean, they try to sound nice and they call it lung butter and earwax. So, I mean, it's not.
Right now, we used to call it earwax back in the day. That was like the street slang for it.
We used to call it hippie crack.
No, I know something else. Hippie crack, man.
Yeah.
It is true. This is a different look, man. Yep. You know, the dabs and the rig and the torch. That was a different look.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a look. All right.
I wanted to ask you guys about, we were talking about ingredients and nutrients and stuff. And a little earlier today, I was hanging out with Jeremy and I never really considered this before, but he was talking about how, what's just some things that I guess enhance the, your hash product. And they were not microbes. They were more of like fermented kind of stuff. And I thought maybe you guys would mention that. I know that and I know Scott is too, are huge proponents of coconut water.
Oh yeah.
So I haven't tried that. So I was thinking that you guys, it sounds like a really easy kind of natural way to kind of bump up the quality of your product. So I thought maybe you guys would want to share that with everybody.
Rambo.
Yeah.
He says FPJs, you got to smoke, man.
I smoked enough to, I'm not.
No, I'm so big.
I'm freaking. I took like three rippers.
So I like to think of it as like biostimulants, things that don't contain NPK that stimulate processes in the plant to produce resin or produce secondary metabolites.
Yep.
So like aloe vera, coconut water, the fermented plant juices can sometimes have some light NPKs in them, depending on the person who makes them.
But these aren't really, but these aren't NPKs we're looking for.
I'm not FPJ. Looking for NPK.
This is What are biostimulants? I was actually doing some research this morning on them, and it's they basically lower the amount of energy or raise the abiotic resistance.
So
yeah,
it's just like it's the energy for your plant. So like, there's a product I was telling Banner about called Regalia from Marone Bio Innovation.
Yeah, we know those guys.
It's a soil drench that makes the plant think it has powdery mildew. So it starts to thicken the cell walls. It will produce a little bit more resin. It does things that would protect it from an invading pathogen.
Yeah.
So being able to trick your plant into thinking it has problems without it actually having problems is one of the best ways to get the dank.
What are you doing when you're working out, man? You're doing positive stresses. Yep. You know? Yep.
Break it down to build it back up.
Heard. Yes, dude, I could talk all day, man.
Yeah,
man. Sorry. I was trying to log into live chat so I could start talking shiz on how much Banner has changed with his device there. And it's the first I noticed, like, all show. He's got his little dab rig going. I'm just the flower power guy. It's just a different.
Come on, let's take a survey, man. Let's start with you, Duke. How flower to concentrates or hash? What are you smoking more of? Give me a percentage.
Probably like 97.323 flower.
You're almost all flower.
Nice. Yeah.
Rambo, how about you?
Big flower guy.
Joints. I'm like almost. I would say I am 97.27% hash. I smoke that rosin and live resin.
Yeah.
Well, why is Duke? Why are you 97% flower? I mean, what you have some reasoning there, or just
because I love hash. Don't get me wrong, but so I'm using cannabis like medicinally too. So I got like messed up fucking sleep, right? So now I have a rotation of indicas that I go through so I don't get burnt out on just one. So I get to go to sleep good every night. Now, if I'm in like some severe pain, because like I've had a lot of fucked up injuries and shit, or, you know, it's just not cutting it and my brain won't shut off, I reserve the hash for those times, you know, where I'm just like, yeah, I'm going out, like whether my brain wants to or not, like we're going to sleep.
Man, I find that flower gets me more high.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, they hit.
Look at that face.
They hit differently, and
look at you.
And especially like, if you were to not hit any hash for just give it a month, right? And then just do the flower thing, and then get you a good blast, you know. You might say different.
I know if I take a 30-day tolerance break from hash, if I smoke hash after 30 days off, I'll trip. I took the entire month of September off for my birthday one time, and I just happened to get high on my birthday again, which was at the end of September. And as I was going to tie my shoes, my shoelaces just started moving and doing the wildest stuff. And it was just one day. Just one dab. Well, I was really high, but that's too high. So, you know,
you realize you're wearing a killer acid shirt, man. Is there really a such thing as too high?
No bad trips.
Contextually.
Okay. For what's going on.
I like that.
There's too high for certain situations, that's for sure.
Andrew, pick me out something, will you, man? I'm about to get too high to be live.
Well, then you should.
Is it the Mile High Moose?
Yeah, so that one is the Mile High Moose. So okay. I took the Aspen OG from 303 Seeds out of Denver, and I hit it with the modified Moose. The Aspen is Sour Diesel times San Fernando Valley times G13. So
I was asking you,
can you
about
go wrong
this.
There, dude?
Yeah, so 303 Seeds did a G13 reversal way back in the day. So that's an old school plant, Aspen OG.
Yeah, I've been a fan of G13. It's nostalgic for me because I made some money off it back in the day.
You're like, what does it taste like? Smells like money. Smells like car payment.
give me a terp critique on that, man. What do you get? Put him on the spot.
It's always tough.
I definitely get a little bit of like lemon in there.
You do get lemon?
A little bit.
You don't get those butterscotched. Who? What was the hang?
Got a little bit of cream.
Werther's original, bro.
Somebody named something butterscotch and it doesn't have butterscotch terps. What's going on there?
So that's when I hunted from Canorado. They used Bodie's butterscotch and hit it with a Grape Pie Backcross 1, which is Grape Pie Sunday Driver. And the cut that we found that did 6% on the wash is like Grape Pixie Sticks. It doesn't have any butterscotch. So it was just our selection. I'm sure there was stuff in the gene pool that had butterscotch in it, but it just didn't hit my mark.
Butterscotch.
What's the new terps? Duke, Duke, you're not like a new trendy guy, are you?
He's got some sort of strawberry something going on, I hear.
Yeah.
Come on, what you up to, man?
I grew the Screaming Eagle back in the day. That was fire.
Yeah?
Yeah, man. That was a fucking good one, man. That would probably pair well with the Aspen one, the moose thing there.
You got good stuff for greenhouse and outdoor, or you pretty much specialize for just indoors?
No, most of my stuff does really good outdoor. There's just certain things that I've just picked out and tested that I know, like, you know, it probably wouldn't perform. So when people ask me, I just like anything except whatever you do, I probably wouldn't roll the dice on this one and this one. You know, they're just too dense, you know what I mean? And when I'm growing outdoor stuff, I'm looking for nice spongy type weed, even to a little bit more flared open. It helps with the hash making too at the end of the day, but it's able to regulate its, you know, those moisture levels and all. And you know, I'm more likely to have a good success at the end of the year having bud like that for sure.
Man, when you guys say hash making, can you just get, I've got like one of those couple $100 bubble washers. Mm-hmm. You know, you get like the 20-gallon washing machine. It's got the bags. Makes it really good.
You got a good kit like that, man. I got an R2-D2 trash can and some old bags and a Swiffer sweeper handle, dog.
I have the washer. Do you remember the Bubbleator, and it comes in? It's a washing machine from China. You're like from people in tiny apartments.
Panty washer.
They wash. Yeah, it's like a single
you wash like a
outfit washing machine. Yeah. But anyway, it made some good bubble hash, man. No, but I'm saying if you do that, because if you go get if you go and harvest, you know, a few, three or four plants outside of your, you know, in your backyard, you're going to get a lot of weed, man.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, like you're going to have too much flower. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're going to just take it and process it down.
Really? Some real
bubble hash.
With the right genetics, you can have too much hash, too.
Yeah, but that's where I go with, dude. I'm like, really? You can't have too much hash.
Dude, we do Uno reverse card, man. That's what we do. hear me out, Jeremy. You're going to love this. So what we're doing, we got a trash compactor. We just take it all in there, and like we'll defan it. We just jam that shit in there, stem and everything. And then we take those brick packs, right? And we send them to Mexico. Yeah.
Classic. Make me grab my Mexican
brick. This guy's got better material than I do.
Oh, man.
Oh,
shout out to you.
Dude, yeah,
Remember the days.
Because, like, I took a few days just to, like, you know, clean the pipes and decompress the brain, right? So I cut on the TV. And, like, I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to go down, like, YouTube rabbit holes. Every time, dude, I would see Grambo's face pop up. And I was like, whoa, fuck yeah. I was a top something. Like, I think I was, like, top three worst strains ever that he reviewed. And I was like, fuck yeah, dude. And then I saw his face on here. I was like, holy shit, dude. Like, that dude's famous as fuck.
That's strange.
Wow.
I'm the young Jamie of weed.
I was just about to jump across this table, man.
I'm old Jamie. Strains, man.
Oh, that's good stuff, man.
That's the greatest compliment I've gotten ever, Duke. Thank you.
Yeah, man.
Ear in his eye. I don't know, man. What else?
So you were asking about the washing process?
Yeah.
You just want to kind of go over a little overview of what that's like?
Oh, because, I mean, if you did have, even in my greenhouse, if I didn't have code enforcement show up,
I'd
have 30 pounds of weed, I imagine, you know?
Yeah, so from start to finish, the process is real easy. I like to start with a 5-gallon bucket and some turkey bags. Put the turkey bag in the 5-gallon bucket, chop into the turkey bag until it's about half full or you've hit the 20-minute mark. You don't want to fill it all the way because the center of the bag won't freeze at the same rate that the outside does, and it will condensate and it will just it'll cause mold, it'll cause a lot of problems.
Right. Did you hear that?
What's your 20-minute mark?
20-minute mark. Yeah, 20,
that's pretty like 20 minutes. So I go, hey, Siri, set a timer for 20 minutes. And I start trimming. And when it buzzes, I throw it in the freezer.
Because
I want it to be frozen as fast as possible. Yes, fresh frozen.
You can't just take in 4 hours worth of.
If you were going to wash it dry, I would also recommend bucking it into a turkey bag or some type of bag and freezing it for 24 to 48 hours before you wash it. You'll get a much better isolation because the neck will become brittle. The cuticle will, it'll break off from the neck way easier, and you'll get a higher quality extract. You won't have a lot of stalks in your wash, so you won't have to refine it as much after it's already bubble hash. So, you know, once you've got it in your turkey bag and it's been 20 minutes, you put it in your freezer. I don't like to tie the turkey bag. I like to let it freeze completely before you tie it.
See, there's some controversy online about that.
Don't let anybody get, they're wrong. They're wrong. The big players have big food racks with the trays.
Right.
And they freeze on trays in walk-in freezers. That way it freezes evenly.
Yeah.
And then they bag it up at a later date after it's already frozen. Usually if you can wash it within the first couple weeks, you don't really need to tie that bag ever. You can just leave it in the freezer. Don't open the freezer. It will be fine.
Turkey bags are key though. Can't just throw it in a contractor bag. You won't judge me if I did.
As long as it's not like scented, I guess.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying it's easy enough to go buy turkey bags, but that's a good tip as opposed to just. Because it's easy enough to take the whole damn plant, you know, or just to buck it right into a contractor bag.
That's fair. I just, you know, you want to do the 20-minute segments still.
Yeah, okay.
So, like, you could probably fill a turkey bag or fill an entire contractor bag, but it would take you 3 hours of trimming into it. But you really need to keep that 20-minute mark.
And you're cutting the stem and everything?
So,
like a mini trim?
You know, if there's resin on the sugar leaves, great. If it's a plant that's like old school, like a blueberry or something like that, you do have to kind of cut the plant material down like a wet trim a little bit.
Yeah.
Just to kind of limit the amount of chlorophyll you have. But on a side note to that, if you're chopping a green plant that hasn't senesced, you don't really want to cut into the leaves at all because that will increase the amount of chlorophyll you have. So if you have a well senesced plant that is faded out, you can wet trim it down and get a higher wash percentage. Or if you have a plant that doesn't have, it has too much nitrogen, hasn't senesced well, or you're outdoors and you got to start chopping because it's about to snow and things aren't done.
Yeah.
You don't want to chop on those leaves.
Oh, that's great. I do not want to chop on the leaves. Chopping my plants here this week and I'm pressing rosin. And I was wondering about that. How tight do I trim? So I should probably just finger pull most of the big stuff and leave it.
So what I do is anything with a petiole, I take off the plant. And then anything that I would have to like dig into the nug, I just chop it right into the bag. The top colas, you want everything to be about a golf ball size or smaller. So if your top colas are bigger than golf balls, chop them down so that you can get in it and get a more efficient wash.
Sure.
But after it's frozen for 24 to 48 hours, then you can go and do the actual wash part of it. At that point, I throw it in a barrel with some water. And then I throw some ice on top of it and I let it start to thaw out in the water for the first 20 to 30 minutes. If you have a variety that you don't know if it's going to wash well and it may have like volatile terpenes, you may need to do a shorter soak so that you don't have a bunch of volatility happen in the water.
And how do you know that? Just by experience on the specific strain?
Pinene, D-limonene, those terpenes tend to not work well in the water because they're water soluble, because and then they'll become solvents. And then as the glands dissolve in the water, more terpenes are let out, which increases the percentage of solvent in the water. And then you're going to have more and more glands dissolving as time goes by when they're in the water. So shorter is better for those types of strains. Usually I recommend people doing a glove test before they ever go to wash something. So you can touch a plant and tell if it's going to wash just by looking at your fingers. You put a black glove on and you can touch a resin rail on a sugar leaf and you'll either have fully intact resin on your finger that you can move around and it does not pop, or you can touch it and it'll be some resin and some smear.
Yeah.
And then that's those that are kind of tacky or greasy, as some people like to say.
Right.
They can wash, but if you're a really bad grower, they will not wash well. And then there's some that you touch that are just pure wet on your glove. They will never wash.
Right.
Scott, you remember all the old school stuff. I can't help myself. Do you remember the Spinal Tap album, Smell the Glove?
Fuck yeah, dude.
As he's describing the black glove, I couldn't help myself.
Jeremy, that was really? So what? Much good information, man. I guess my takeaway is kind of like just enjoy the Wilson-esque ladies, is like as far as hash goes.
100%.
You know, that's the way.
Yeah, so actually Scott was talking about how flower gets them higher than hash, and that's because most hash is not from fully developed plants, because people are trying to chop early to guarantee good color, when if you have a properly selected hash plant from a hash maker, the color will be the same no matter what. You can take it to 5 to 10% amber and it will still be white hash. Hash color is strain dependent.
So is that the new like THC level?
What's that?
Well, like it's the new like false way to choose something.
Oh, by color?
Yeah. You don't necessarily really want that super white.
You know, just like cannabis, something, two strains can test at 30% or 25%, but we all know that they both might not smoke the same. So just because your hash is as white as my hash does not mean it smokes the same as my hash. There are plenty of people out there that can produce wetter or whiter hash than you would ever believe, and it burns bad.
Yeah, I thought there was like, don't they do like color remediation of that sometimes as well to mess with that stuff?
Not as much to rosin. That's more of a solvent process. But you know, I can taste it if your plant wilted. Like if you're running chelated salts and if your irrigation's off and your plant was absorbing higher ECs at one point, because I only smoke living soil organic hash, I can taste it. I swear. Because if you promise me you haven't sprayed anything on your plants,
like sadness, I can taste
it. Because what else was it? It's either your nutrient availability was wrong at some point and your plant absorbed nutrients at the wrong time or wrong rate, or you're lying to me and you sprayed something on your plant, because our hash tastes different. So why is our hash taste different? So I always just assume it's because they don't know how to manage their nutrition appropriately. Because with living soil, 150 gallon pots, I never have moisture issues. Like I can give them 30 gallons of water and they don't run off. It's so easy to, you know. Yeah. So it's, you know, not all hash is equal. Not all flour is equal. You know, organic hash has a higher chance of tasting better, but that doesn't mean salt hash can't taste as good. You just have to know how to grow.
Yep.
Yeah.
You got to give the plant everything that it wants, man.
100%. Yep.
And nutrition is a part of that.
Well, not letting it wilt, not letting
that's
it.
That's what get I mean. There's dry, other water management, like, there's stress, there's temperature and humidity. I'm not saying BPD, dude. But there's all sorts of other things. That's where those biostimulants come into and stressors.
Back to the hash making. Once you get your material thawing, it takes about 20 minutes for it to thaw, sometimes 30 if you know it's a really good strain and you can trust it in the water. And then the amount of agitation is really dependent upon the hash maker. Everybody does it a little different. Like the modified mousse, I can do 4 20-minute agitations, and the third wash is usually as good and as sellable as the first and second wash. But there are some strains that you can usually only take the first and second wash of.
Can I ask you real quick, just because it's not that hard to get one of these bubble machines and start doing this yourself. So if you were going to start making your own hash, would you just explain that really quick? You did four
20-minute agitations.
So you're taking that same bag that you the bag with your material in it. You're going to run it four different times. Yep. And usually the quality gets worse. The first one is the best. You know, run it first time, it's the best.
Yep.
By the end, you're getting some that looks like sand coming out.
So
you're adding more ice each time.
Yeah.
So I generally don't have to add more ice because I'm in my cold room. So it's 30
but more water.
It's 32 degrees in there. So it's cold enough to almost wash without ice.
Wow. Shit. I know where I'm going this
way. Yeah, I know, right? That's pretty your grip, dude.
So that's actually a new trend that's kind of going on in the hash world, is like doing iceless washes, because if you can get a situation cold enough, you don't need the ice. Yeah.
You gotta have water. Abuse, bro, right, man? We don't do it.
Or minimize your amount, maybe.
So you know, at that point, you put it in the bat, you put it in the machine, run it for 20 minutes, pour it out through your filters, collect your hash, put it on your screen or your tray, and then you put the bag back in the machine, refill it with water, and run it. The ice should be inside the bag with the material. So you shouldn't have to replace any of the ice or anything like that. If you're in a warmer climate, you may want to add ice each round.
Right.
Because the warmer it gets, the more chlorophyll comes out, and that is the bad part of washing in a room too warm or with a strain that's not meant to wash. So just keep it as cold as possible.
Wow, yeah, so trippy about that strain. It is. You can do everything right, but if it's the wrong strain, man, it just ain't gonna work.
Yeah, so I mean, I've had stuff range from like I would get 220 grams of finished hash per 4x4,
right,
all the way down to like 30 grams of finished hash per 4x4. Same soil tests, same lights, same lung room, even that these tents.
This is what you talk about, Willow's face right here.
I thought that's your I'm high as balls
face.
So
very strong.
This is my high as balls face, ready?
Johnny, can you confirm something for me there?
Yes, sir.
Got,
yes, sir.
The smoking muskokin.
Oh, yeah, you betcha.
Can somebody please confirm that Jeremy isn't actually Jeff from Rasta, from Irie Genetics, without his dreads? Which, because Jeremy, you're very well spoken and informative on the microphone, and Rasta Jeff is, and I am seeing a little resemblance. It's a compliment.
Bro, my mind is blown right now.
You know, what's funny is Rasta Jeff told a story about how he walked around the Indo Expo and handed out seeds for free. And then the people that run the Indo Expo the next year, or maybe that year, asked him to get a booth and to stop doing it. And I did the exact same thing at the DGC Cup last year. I walked around like a pirate and gave everybody free seeds without having to buy a booth.
The pirate that dressed up like Rasta Jeff?
No, I was just acting like a pirate. Yeah, this year I bought a booth.
All right. Respect. Everybody starts somewhere.
I listen to Grow From Your Heart podcast, so it's a great podcast. So I may have some tendencies since I listen to him in the garden every week.
Irie
Grambo.
Irie.
Grambo.
What's up?
We have AI for this, right? And we have a meme generator for it anyway. We don't even need to do any work.
Me and Rasta Jeff combined into one person.
Thundar the Barbarian, we have called your spotlight.
Good stuff, man.
Yeah, so after that, it really depends on if you're using a freeze dryer or if you're trying to air dry at that point.
And just a 20,000 foot overview, freeze dryer, the idea is that it's under pressure, terpenes
under vacuum. Yep. It's sucking the moisture out under vacuum so that you can volatilize the water under a lower temperature and not volatilize the terpenes with the resin glands.
Boom, mic drop. Yep. Don't drop that mic. It's expensive.
What happens?
So if you have to air dry, you'll want to squeeze the moisture out of your patties as much as possible. And then you'll want to freeze them. And then some people will sieve it or some people will microplane it. I have experience with a microplane, just a standard microplane like you would just get at a store.
Okay.
And you just microplane your puck of hash onto some parchment paper. People usually would have done it like in a pizza box.
Yeah.
So that the cardboard from the pizza box help absorb the moisture and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, it makes sense.
you can do it without the pizza box if you happen to have like a dehumidifier in the room or any actual equipment.
Clean the box well, right? Like get the pepperoni inches out of the way.
Do you mean like on like parchment paper or something?
Yeah, on
like
parchment right on paper inside of the cardboard.
Right.
Clean one, like not the one that was underneath the pizza.
Yep. Yeah.
You turn it inside out, man. All right. Like it never happened.
Flip it over.
You could probably get some free pizza boxes from your local spot with a nice trade, I would imagine.
Or a couple buds. I bet you a dude would totally hook you up with a couple boxes.
Yeah.
And then you know, you're gonna want to have it set out at room temperature, or not at room temperature, but at 60 degrees. And an appropriate humidity for, I think it's like 2 weeks it takes to dry the hash fully. And it can be sooner in some areas like Colorado and stuff like that.
Wow.
But ideally, if you're controlling the temperature and humidity of the room, it will happen at the same speed, kind of no
and
matter
where. And I did miss, you did you give the temperature and humidity? Sorry, I was thinking about getting a pizza box with Grambo's face on it.
I was thinking about eating that pizza.
So it's more just cool. Cool and dry.
Yeah.
So just
like 60. A refrigerator.
Yep.
So oh, really? Refrigerator's not too humid?
I wasn't. Like back when I was in Virginia doing my thing, I had like a fridge.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like hella low humidity, no oxygen in there, stayed cool. So I'd slip my pizza box in there.
Yeah.
I'd clean the cheese off and shit.
But. So that's if you don't have a few grand to drop on a freeze dryer, refrigerator is like kind of your next best bet.
Yeah, but not even close.
So, though,
yeah, that's redneck tech. Like,
yeah, so
in the day, yeah.
If you really want to figure out how to do the air dried hash as like dialed in as possible, just go to Bubble Man's old videos. Like he was doing it before freeze dryers were even around, and he is very transparent about how he was doing it all.
Yeah, it's a bubble.
I think
what's that I was going to say.
You see a bubble man
these days? I haven't seen him.
He was really good, really early, and I made some
bubble man. Let's get
a lot.
He actually
works on the bubble man. Let's get you on the panel.
He works at a big grow in Canada called Whistler Tech. He's making and like he's heading some R&D for some like massive scaled up bubble machines.
Wish we had some kind of.
Jeremy like knows all the stuff. I'm impressed too. I'm literally like, where's Bubba Man? He's working at a facility in Whistler. Like, Jesus Christ, GPT.
Does he ride a mountain bike?
That's awesome.
I remember your mic is very directional. Banner, you're not coming through very well on the mic.
Sorry.
Yeah,
I will say cheers to Banner, man. Banner put this little panel together a couple days ago over the weekend. He says, come on, man, let's have some friends over. So I'll just give you a big up.
Yeah, man.
I'd be remiss if I didn't say the freeze dryer settings for everybody, just so that they all kind of know what's going on with the freeze
dryer.
Please
do, because I have a freeze dryer. I'll write these down.
So shelf temp can range between 5 degrees and 45 degrees. Shelf temp will...
It's a hell of a range, man.
Well, it really depends on if you want to dry it for less or more time.
Okay.
The only things that affect your loss of terpenes in hash is temperature and time under vacuum.
Okay.
So...
Too much time under vacuum?
Too much time under vacuum can volatilize glands just because they're under vacuum.
Sure, sure.
So you want to... I know the average... Shelf temperature is about 35 or 45 degrees. It goes in increments of 10 on the freeze dryer.
Right.
That's okay. And the shelf temperature time directly correlates with how long you have to do it. So like if you have it at 45 degrees, you may only need to freeze dry for 10 to 14 hours. But if you have it at 5 degrees, you may have to do it for 18 to 24 hours for the same batch. Right. So a lot of people... will say that the freeze drying at the lowest temperature works the best for the end quality, but there is a fine line with vacuum freezing it too long in that process. So just going as low as possible isn't necessarily the best because you can get the same quality out of a higher temperature if you just pull it out at the right time rather than letting it go extra.
Same thing with like chicken nuggets in the air fryer. Very similar.
Yeah, I gotta know when to pull out.
Degrees. 35. Yeah, I run 35 degrees on my freeze dryer. It will go down to 25 and up to 45. So there is a little bit of a range on the freeze dryer unit. And at that point, I usually freeze dry for about 12 hours and then I'll pull it out and check it. And then I'll chop it up and then freeze dry it for like another hour or two, depending If there's a lot in the trays, it requires more freeze drying just because it's a thicker patty. And then if when you open your freeze dryer, it is key to have the temperature of the room and the temperature of the freeze dryer the same so that your hash doesn't wick moisture.
Oh, so, yeah, you're right.
If you're pulling it out of a 10-degree freeze dryer and your room is 30 degrees, well, there's you're going to have a sizzle on your hash. So you're going to hear that. So a lot of people will freeze dry their hash at whatever temperature they can get their room down to.
Sure.
So that is that helps a lot.
That's cool. Good tips, man. For the most part, I don't think most of our audience has a freeze dryer because they're a few grand. But for a few hundred bucks, you can get a little bubbleator machine or whatever they're called. On Wish.com, they've got them for, I think, $8, if I'm not mistaken.
They're like six on
Temu. $6 on Temu.
It's all about Temu.
$6.37. No, but seriously, and to come with the bubble bags, and it is not hard to make hash. I used to make it out of my scrap stuff.
You can smoke hash. You can smoke rosin.
Well, yeah.
If you're a good enough grower, the hash will melt all the same.
Yeah, they talk about
melt clear dome, dude.
Yeah, all right.
Y'all remember that?
I love it. What else, dude? What else you got, man?
I think that was it, man. That was a great hang. I know we could jive for a while, but we can always do some more shows, or you could come to the DDC Cup, hang out with Duke.
Yeah.
Get some knowledge. That's just one great thing about the event. It's good networking, and man, there's going to be so much good product there. Flour, hash, concentrates. So stoked for that. Check out the Dominion Blend when available at buildthesoil.com.
Hey, I got a discount code for y'all. If y'all, you can tell your people they can save 5% if they order Build a Soil anything. It's just, it's easy. It's just Dominion Seed Co. So like Dominion Seed Co.
Nice.
Right, that give y'all 5%. Sorry to interrupt, man. I just
no worries. That's good to know.
That's the perfect timing for it.
Rambo, doing work, man. Doing work.
Jeremy, you got some shot yourself out.
Yeah, so I'm the seed maker for Threes Genetics Reserve. I'm just dropped the modified Moose Femme line. You can find us at threesgeneticsreserve.com, or I'm at Instagram at JLS Monster.
Legit, man, legit. You've been coming over your second time hanging out at the bakery.
Yep.
You are welcome. You always drop great information.
Nice.
So you're always welcome here, man.
Nice. Thank you.
Duke's not
thanks to Grambo.
You know, then
Grambo. Yes, I'll be there next show. Grambo, putting this together. This has been great. We behind the scenes. I know we've been working on having guests in studio and audio and different things. And
yeah, there was a wizard. We use a software that definitely does not want us doing what I'm doing right now. But I got inside of it, so we got it real.
I got all up in it.
You can't keep me out, baby. Check your shorts.
Shrooms went for a walk, man.
Check your shorts. We're in there.
You got to not think about it, Grambo. Okay,
my man.
No,
but thank you guys. Yes, this went great and much less stressful. I loved it.
Grambo, give yourself a shout out.
Together, man.
All over the place.
Then. I mean, I'm on the Dude Grows show. Find me at Grambo Grows. I've been doing a little bit more stuff. Like every Saturday, I get lonely. I hang out with my kid, and then she goes to bed, and I have to be quiet. And I don't have anything to do.
And then he calls me and I don't answer.
No one answers. So I click the go live button one night. People actually watched and they engaged.
It's fun, man. Grambo.shop
if you want some of my, my shameless gear. Anybody that wears a Grambo Grove shirt to the cup, I will say hi.
Get a handy?
I don't know what you guys are talking
when
about.
When you realize you're alive.
I'm over here now. I'm over here.
Oh, shoot, man. That's good stuff.
That's guys. A wrap.
Yes.
Thanks, everybody. Yes. Thanks, Banner. Thanks, chat.
Yes. Thank you, chat. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone.
It's very cool, man. Don't read the chat, all right?
My wife told me she was going to get on the chat and troll me.
Never read the chat.
All right. Be good, all y'all.
Bye.
Peace.
Later.